He fires for three. He drains it through contact.
You
makes a move and slams it home in two.
And
from NBA range, he fires for three, and you bet he drained it.
L.
Pulls to the basket, throws up the alley-oop, and touches it home.
V.
From the left wing, 4-3. Yes, sir.
This is your radio home for UNLV running Rebels basketball.
On ESPN Las Vegas, 1100 AM and 100.9 FM.
Live from the Findlay Toyota Studios, it's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Hour as RJ Clifford will join us to talk some Raiders, some mixed martial arts in about 40 minutes. But we've been very tardy on meeting up with John Cecenti, who is the king of the Las Vegas Bowl. That's your new title, king, right? We're in a monarchy now. There's a lot going on with the bowl system, so we'll talk about the Las Vegas Bowl, but then also your take on college football, because John pretty much comes in contact with everyone and has done so over, how long have you been now with the Las Vegas Bowl?
This is year 24.
So you know,
13 at the helm.
That's pretty crazy.
That's a lot.
You're getting old.
I'm dating myself.
You're getting old.
I'm only 40 years old, too.
Wow. What an early start. All right. You seem unusually calm in the face of what could be chaos coming up, because we have the CFP coming out tonight. We still have, what, 9 title games. There's usually a lot of maneuvering with all the bowl games. So how are you feeling right now about your place and how many teams you're down to? And again, remind people, the bowl agreement tie-ins are with which conferences?
So this year we're back to, if you remember, we did deals with 3 different conferences, which was originally Pac-12, which turned into Pac-12 Legacy when the Pac-12 dissolved. And then the Big Ten and the SEC. The Big Ten and the SEC were always going to rotate every other year. So we're back to a Big Ten year. So I like to joke that we're the Little Rose Bowl, if you will. So traditional Pac-12 legacy teams and Big Ten teams. Back to your point about me being calm. You're absolutely right. I think this is the calmest I've ever been in here in December, talking to you about teams and you know, not having my phone blow up, which actually scares me a little bit. I've spent a lot of time with all the athletic directors that we're talking to. I spent a lot of time with all the conference representatives that we're talking to. I've spent a lot of time with ESPN, and everybody is completely aligned and in agreement that we feel pretty confident, pretty comfortable with who our matchup is going to be, based on where the Big Ten sits and the teams that are expected to get into the CFP, and then the order of which teams will be selected ahead of us. So I feel really, really good about where we sit. I don't expect any issues at all on that side. With regards to the Pac-12 side, same thing, right? We know the traditional Pac-12 teams that are going to be there. I'm pretty confident as to we pick second on that side, pretty confident as to who's going to pick ahead of us. And so I joked with you when I walked in here and I said, you know, we've been talking to teams and getting a head start on things and getting going on things. So I feel really good about where we sit, and nothing's official until we have a conversation tomorrow night with our bowl committee. We'll present research. We'll present the teams that are on the table. I'd like to think everybody's going to be aligned. And then we'll have a discussion. We'll have a vote on it. And so at, you know, 8:30 tomorrow night at Whiskey over by Allegiant Stadium, I'll walk out of that with some marching orders from our committee and from our huddle and wait for Selection Sunday.
Can you give me 3 schools?
I can give you more than 3 schools.
Yeah, I'm saying
How about I give you 3 on one side and 2 on the other side?
I like that.
And the reason I say 2 on the other side is the Pac-12 kind of worked itself out a little bit for us with the fact that Arizona State played to end the season, right? One of them got to 9 wins. One of them stayed at 8-4, right? Arizona beats Arizona State, puts them at 9 wins. 2 things happen there. One, Arizona beat Arizona State, which was a rival. So how would you take Arizona State over Arizona when they lost to their rival? 2, Utah and USC were in the mix. Utah has 10 wins. If they're sitting there for us, everybody expects USC to go to Alamo because they've never been there. And they really would like to have, you know, Lincoln Riley back in that spot. If Utah's the team sitting there, they have 10 wins. We can't drop down to an 8-win team, We have a one game slide. So that that almost eliminates Washington at 8-4. It eliminates Arizona State at 8-4, and the selection would come down to a 10-2 Utah that's 15th in the country, or a 9-3 Arizona that's somewhere in the neighborhood of, you know, depending on the rankings tonight, 20, 23, 24, right? And so I think those are the two teams that we're going to have to choose from right there. On the other side, there's a few more. We think Ohio State, Indiana, and Oregon. There's no possible way that the three of those teams do not get into the CFP. And now you're looking at the next pool down, which is Michigan, Iowa, Illinois, Minnesota, and Nebraska. Michigan is probably the top team out of that pool, and is sitting there, has not been to Orlando in quite some time. Iowa just beat Nebraska to get to 8 wins. Tampa picks ahead of us after Orlando. They have not been to Tampa in quite some time. And I think, if all goes according to plan, I think we're going to be looking at a selection between Illinois, Nebraska, and Minnesota. And that's going to be the discussion for tomorrow night.
Nebraska.
Is that your vote?
That one's intriguing because we had some issues at Big Ten Media Day that we need to hash through. And Big Fella's not here today, but Adam Hill took Matt Rhule to the deck in a column, and Matt Rhule had said doesn't love collegiate sports being in Vegas.
I'm going to address two things real quick. One, when I talked to Nebraska yesterday, I said to them, I said, you want to hear the weirdest thing ever? And I said, there's a local radio host at ESPN Radio here in Las Vegas that is from the exact same area as me, and I know we're going to talk about this. And I said, it's the weirdest thing ever, but we grew up in central New Jersey, and for some reason, Nebraska was the most popular team in that area. If you remember, like, Nebraska kind of owned the area. No offense to Rutgers and Penn State and anything else, but Nebraska was the hot team in Jersey.
They definitely were in South Jersey, because that's how they got a couple of the key
and a lot of the players were going
teams.
There, yeah. Right? Over those years. And for some reason, Nebraska was really popular in Jersey. I don't get it. To address Coach Rhule, I had a conversation with him in the AD. That came out poorly, right? And I know Adam's going to come at me, and Adam's going to defend, and I'm with Adam on this one. But I heard a different side to those comments, and I heard the backstory to those comments. I also heard a sincere apology for the way they came off. And Nebraska said if they are in consideration and they end up getting the opportunity to play in Las Vegas, Coach Rhule has no problem getting on a plane, coming out here and talking to everybody and sitting down and meeting all the appropriate people and addressing that, right? He owns it and understands how that came off, but wants us to know here in Las Vegas that he actually loves Las Vegas and he loves coming here, and he didn't mean for the way that sounded. Okay. And I truly and honestly believe them when they said that.
So pause for 1 second. We're very shorthanded. So I host and I also control the cameras. So because I want to get a good camera shot of this. So we're going to take your microphone.
Okay.
Right? We're gonna slide it over this way. And now you're going to be right there. And then you can see through. And then you've got a clear shot our camera because we want
to. The reason I agree to do radio is because my face is made for radio. Nobody wants to actually see me.
Well,
and this is not a good angle.
We want to get you need more lighting too. Go to break.
I need a PR guy in here with one of those like influencer lights.
So we're gonna have fun with this because first of all, I do believe that Rhule didn't exactly mean what he said. I always wonder. I think we have this gift. I think we have always been very podcast like in that people come in, they chill out. And we kind of get them to say stuff maybe they normally wouldn't say because it doesn't feel like a stiff radio show. So I'm patting myself on the back on that one. But podcasts especially, when you start going long form and it's chill and people are leaning back, like people open up. And I think Matt Rhule, one, got caught in the comfortability of a podcast. Two, I know what the mood was at the Big Ten Media Day. Nothing against the folks who brought the game here, right? Because we paid the Big Ten, Vegas did. We organized the whole thing, but the event kind of sucked in terms of turnout because a lot of the media didn't show up from the Midwest. So, you know, if you're, most of the Big Ten is Midwest, you look up and you're like, okay, I don't like the media much, but, like, I at least want them here. Like, we made the trip out and we're doing a media day. There's no media. There were a lot of coaches who sat in front of at their dais, like three people. So I think that was probably what Rhule was saying about Vegas just ain't the spot for a Big Ten media day. And I don't even know the politics with like Oregon, Washington, USC, UCLA, all that stuff. I have no idea on that.
Yeah, listen, I think a couple things, right? We're known in Las Vegas to whenever we put an event here, whenever we put something here, it ends up being bigger and better than it is anywhere else. I think for an event like that, you take another look at it, and are you better suited staying in the footprint of 14 of your teams, right, and closer to your teams? That time of year is very difficult. People go on vacations. It's the middle of July. Midwest fans, they're going through long winters, right? They've got their summer vacations planned. Mm-hmm. To go this far away and to justify adjusting a summer vacation to go out to Vegas, that's a tough one for somebody to explain to their family, right? I also think the Big Ten might have underestimated. You know, they thought people were going to flock to Vegas because it is Vegas, and it was a big space. If you remember, massive. That was really spread out, yep. And they probably took up more space than they needed. They probably took up a little bit too much space, and I think they would admit that.
Can I throw in one more thing? Don't underestimate what's going on right now with traditional media and budgets.
It's not easy to travel.
We all don't get to travel like we used to. You don't just get rubber stamped.
Well, we also have the ability to share the content back with everybody there, mm-hmm. right? I'll send one person that I'm going to work their butts off for 14 hours a day
right.
and send that content back. Yeah. And listen, you hit the nail on the head. There's been a little bit of rub about doing so many things on the West Coast. Their spring meetings were on the West Coast. Their AD meetings and head coaches meetings earlier in the year were on the West Coast. And it was like, well, wait a minute, what are we doing here? But I don't think Matt specifically was taking a shot at Vegas directly. Adam is going to come at me.
We're getting him on, right? Because we're doing a lot of apologizing for Matt Rhule. I think he doesn't need to come on and apologize, but I would like to talk to him about what he thinks of Vegas and what he thinks.
Can
of
Can we trust Adam
Pac-12.
To behave himself? If is
well, I don't know that he needs to.
I
don't need.
I trust you.
I don't know that he needs to behave himself. I think him not behaving himself is probably going to make for a good thing. Believe me, Matt Rhule can handle himself.
I think Matt Rhule can handle himself as well.
He'll
and listen,
be fine with Big Fella.
I reached out to before I even had some of these conversations. This one's really tough for me because I'm actually friends with all three coaches, and all three coaches have already called me, and I've gone out drinking in Las Vegas with all three coaches, and so it's been very difficult. Brett Bielema in Illinois. He met his wife here at a bar in Las Vegas, and then they played blackjack together, and they ended up getting married.
Shocking.
Shocker, right? PJ Fleck has been out here a lot in Vegas. We've played golf together. We've gone out in Vegas together. We were just out together. He loves it here. He's actually loves it here so much that he said if he's done coaching at any point, him and his wife agreed that there'd be two places that they'd go, Las Vegas or Scottsdale. Those are two other coaches that love Las Vegas that I have a relationship with, and so for me right now, balancing all three of those teams on that side has been a little bit difficult and a little bit of a juggling act.
So we're talking Las Vegas Bowl. Announcement will come out officially on Sunday. Teams most likely under consideration for the Big Ten are Illinois, Minnesota, Nebraska. From the old Pac-12, because you're still under the old agreement, so Pac-12 teams are all over the place. It looks like Arizona or Utah.
I'm still going to put USC in there for one reason. I can't imagine that the Alamo Bowl is going to do this, but the Alamo Bowl for 20 consecutive years has always taken the highest ranked team. Okay? I don't think they've had Utah in a while. Utah is probably going to finish ranked higher than USC. USC poses a little bit of a challenge for us, a little bit of an issue for us, because we had them in a kickoff game last year. Phenomenal. We had them in the bowl game last year. Phenomenal. That would be three consecutive trips to Las Vegas for USC. I love Coach Riley. I love the USC fans. I would love to have them back. I just don't see them passing Alamo. And quite frankly, I'm not so sure that they want to come back to the same place for their bowl experience. So that's the reason why I say USC probably not right now. But stranger things have happened.
I was just looking up a quick note on something you said. John Cesenti is with us here in studio, head of the Las Vegas Bowl, about Nebraska being popular in our state back in the 80s.
I'm a lot younger than you, so I was thinking like early 90s.
Were you? Okay. Because I actually, this is funny.
Late 80s, early 90s?
Things come full circle. You are younger than me. I forgot. I actually went to the first kickoff classic in 1983 as a kid, and it was Penn State and Nebraska, and I remember rooting for Nebraska. Even at that age, I knew Penn State were a bunch of dirtbags. And Nebraska beat them 44-6.
Was that at the Meadowlands?
Stadium.
Yeah. See, I don't even remember that.
Yeah, that was the first one. And now look at where we are, which I'm going to get to in about 10 minutes. I got to talk about your preseason efforts to put together games and now the challenge that's coming from not only this country, but other countries. Well, so once you announce on Sunday what the bowl game is going to be, then what do we do? Like, how do we get tickets? Where do we go? Where do we get information?
So once we announce, and we've changed our strategy a little bit, we noticed that the bulk of the ticket sales that were being purchased by fans, true fans, were being done on Selection Sunday when we announced the teams. A lot of times there were ticket brokers that were rolling dice and taking a chance and buying big blocks of tickets prior to hoping that we had this great matchup. So in an effort to make sure that the right fans and the right people get the tickets, we are putting the tickets on sale on Selection Sunday. The timeline right now is the CFP and Top 25 Selection show on ESPN will go from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. local time. At 10 o'clock, all the conferences are going to gather their thoughts, gather their notes, and at about 10:30, 10:45, they're going to start the process of selection order. They're going to go in order and zoom in each bowl director. With the conference, you're going to make your selection to the conference commissioner. So I'll have Tony Petitti at about 10:45, tell him who our intentions are. He's going to tell me who went before us. And then what they do is they go back into the Zoom room and they patch in the head coach, the athletic director, and then our committee chair this year will make the official invitation to the head coach and to the athletic director. We'll do that on both sides. So by 11 a.m., we'll be ready to go. At 11:05, tickets will be on sale. They'll be on lvbowl.com. You get them through there, right through Allegiant Stadium, right through the Ticketmaster. Set up on there, and we will be live and ready to go with tickets ready that Sunday morning. I anticipate if we end up with the matchup that we think we could end up with, that tickets are going to move pretty good, which is really exciting, and I'm hopeful that everything plays out and works out the way it does. It'd be nice to see Allegiant full for a game. I think, you know, there was a little bit of hesitation, there was a little bit of pushback on the date this year, right? How for 30 years you were a pre-Christmas game. Well, guess what? We love the pre-Christmas slot. The bowl was brought here to drive tourism the week before Christmas. I actually loved it because we were done. We enjoyed the holidays. We enjoyed Christmas. I slept. I watched everybody else work, and I laughed at them while I sat in my sweats on the couch and watched everybody else work. Guess what? Now I'm the guy that's working right up until New Year's Eve. However, it is going to be a lot. It gives us a little bit more time to be prepared. But I also think, given the fact that we are New Year's Eve at 12:30, it's an early game. It's a primetime slot, 3:30 Eastern time. It's a coveted spot that everybody wants, big TV window. It gives everybody the opportunity to come into Las Vegas for a day or two. We could use a little boost in tourism at that time of the year now as well. They go to the game at 12:30. They can enjoy New Year's Eve on that Wednesday night, have a big party. Yep. They could be hungover, enjoy Thursday, go to the Sphere, go to Bruno Mars, go to wherever they want to go Thursday on the 1st. They can go home on January 2nd on Friday and still have the weekend to get ready for work. All of those schools that I mentioned, Illinois, Minnesota, Nebraska, it is colder than all hell. There is snow on the ground. And I did Zooms with all of them yesterday, and I turned my computer camera out my window, and I said, it's 68 degrees, sunny, and blue skies. Yeah. Who wants to come to Vegas? And every one of them do. And trust me, all of their fans want to get the hell out of there and come enjoy some nice weather over New Year's here in Vegas as well.
John Cecente is going to stick with us. Las Vegas Bowl, lvbowl.com. Once the announcement is made, that's where you can get your tickets. It's ESPN Las Vegas here on a Tuesday. On the way back, I want John's take on what's going on with the muddled, I like it. I was going to say a mess. I like that college football is going through this transition period. I know it's not easy on guys like John, but we'll get into what's going on with the CFP and also a lot of these coaching rumors. Rolling on here Tuesday. John Cecente is in studio with us. We talk to John about every week. A bunch the rest of the way, because I also like to lean on John's knowledge of college football and all his connections, and he knows all these coaches. He knows so many of the administrators, and I want your view on where college football is right now. I'm going to give you right off the bat, and this is why I think people have to stick to what they're good at. When I was watching Get Up on Monday, they have a bunch of pro football people led by Orlovsky, and I like Orlovsky, but ranting and raving about the Lane Kiffin situation, and they keep saying, there's no leadership in the NCAA and college sports because this schedule is so screwed up. okay, everyone, tell me how you change the schedule. Mullen nailed it yesterday. Someone asked him kind of randomly about, hey, what would you change? And he's like, well, the first thing you'd have to do is you've got 136 Division I schools in FBS, and you have to get with them and go, all of you need to change your academic calendars. Because the entire time I was watching everyone rip the schedule, like, these are also schools. Everyone forgets that. Academics matter. That's why the schedule's all over the place, because every school doesn't start their semesters. Some don't even have two semesters. Three, they got mini, whatever.
Trimesters.
It's crazy. Oh, just fix it. There is no fix. You can tweak a little bit with the schedule. There is no miracle schedule that's going to fix all this. With the coaches, you know, with coaches being poached and leaving. Everyone's season ends differently. What would you do?
Well, he's 100% right. It all revolves around the academic schedule, yeah. Right? Some schools are starting that Monday right after New Year's. UNLV doesn't start till the end of the month, right? So there's a good example right there. I think what you have to do first, though, is you have to get a handle on the early recruiting period, right? Like, to have to be recruiting right now while you're gearing up for bowl games, while you're gearing up for playoff games, while coaching changes are happening, is crazy to me, right? And I understand why they're doing it now, because a lot of them want to get the kids in for the spring semester. Mm-hmm. Okay? Well, if you change the transfer portal to sometime in the spring, you eliminate some of that spring ball. You have unofficial spring ball, and the biggest problem is you have coaches getting players in for the spring. Then they're going to spring ball, and then they're getting better offers, and they're jumping ship, and they're screwing up rosters in the middle of spring ball to try to get somewhere for the fall. I think if you to your point, to Dan's point, you have to take the entire school year as opposed to the semesters, right? So if you commit to a school year early and you eliminate that early recruiting period, you change the transfer portal a little bit to go after the full season, and then you get to school when you again, it's easier said than done, and that's why it is as screwed up as it is. But a couple minor tweaks here and there, I think, helps a lot and changes a lot. It makes me sick to think that Ole Miss had the best season they've had in the history. And you can't blame Lane Kiffin. He mm-hmm. has to go do that. If he's going to go take the dream job and he's going to go take that job, he has to get there as soon as possible. He's got recruits there, right? We talked about this off air. Penn State has no coach right now. The recruiting period.
Tomorrow's signing day.
You have zero players that are committed out of high school on your roster. That's a huge problem. A couple tweaks here and there could make a huge, huge difference. You're never going to fix it completely because of the point that Dan made with the academic schedules and academic calendars. And I love how we still have to abide by those, even though some of that stuff has gone out the window. But yeah, the calendar is the number one issue in college football, in my opinion, which leads to so many other issues.
We had to catch up on time. So James, we're going to take a break here on the way back. In closing, I just wanted to get to a couple of the college openings like Penn State, and also just what you think of the season UNLV had, and can UNLV actually keep this coaching staff together? Because I think Dan Mullen's going to be getting calls, has gotten calls, so I don't know what he's going to do.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
We've got John Cincinnati in studio. We blew it, man. I don't know. Why didn't we have you on all November? I'm getting old and I forget these things.
I'll tell you why. Because I used to kind of be somebody in this little place, and then we go hire a new football coach, and then he's funny and entertains everybody, and you guys all like him and buy into that. And then we hire a new basketball coach, and then everybody wants to be around him, and then they forget about little old John because we got a new football coach and new basketball
coach.
It's
our fault.
Yep. I used to be the college athletic guy, and then we brought in two new coaches with personality.
All right, I teased that we were going to talk about Mullen and the job he did in staying. But I have something else important I wanted to get to. You are part of putting together not only the Las Vegas Bowl, but also usually a big humdinger before the football season at the beginning of it, essentially our own kickoff classic. And I think that's getting more challenging because now I'm seeing, is Ireland having another game?
Ireland is having a game. I saw North Carolina and, gosh, I can't remember. I did see North Carolina and somebody going to Ireland next year.
You saw that the ACC has a game in Brazil.
Yeah.
The Saudis were trying to get involved with the Holiday Bowl and then some other game.
Like, talk to the Saudis.
The LVCVA has a lot of money, but I don't know if we want to be spending Saudi money on college football games. What the heck is going to happen in the future of these kickoff games?
Listen, I started putting an emphasis on this a few years ago, and to think I was planning 6 or 7 years out on games. I didn't even plan on being there, and now here I am right smack in the middle of it. But there's certain places where the money's there, right? And it's so obvious that people are willing to put money in, because a place like Las Vegas, a place like Nashville, a place I don't understand the economics of the Brazil thing. I do understand the economics of Dubai and Saudi, because I did talk to those folks. But for some place like Vegas, let's use Vegas as the example, right? You have two teams that are 0-0. You have two fan bases that are starving for college football and have had nothing for 8 or 9 months. Yep. You have 8 or 9 months to sell tickets. So you have these teams that are excited to get here, that are excited about their season, that are excited about for their teams, and it's a world-class destination. So 9 months in advance, you can book a game, you can get excited, you can come. Boom, that's an easy one. The Saudis was a different animal. However, the economics of it worked really, really well. They were so desperate to have American sports over there that they own an airline, right? So you're sending a plane over. We'll take care of it. We'll pay for it. We own hotels. We'll take care of it. We'll pay for it. They have security. We'll take care of it. We'll take care of all the expenses. You don't have to worry about selling tickets, because all the tickets are purchased by the government. And they go to this program for the citizens. All the economics work. We're going to pay you a management fee to do it all. Right, it's straight cash. It was a great model. It's a great deal. Now, convincing people to go that far to start the season into an area that is, you know, has some challenges, if you will, that you know, and some uncertainties, can be difficult. The Brazil thing, I know that they were talking to a couple schools that I know fairly well and I'm close to. I don't understand the deal with that. I know the NFL went down there. I don't know if they're returning down there. I did a deep dive on it to see who these folks were, and they're all legitimate and longtime college athletic people. And so you're probably going to see the game pop up in Brazil. You're probably going to see, again, that Ireland trip pop up. We looked at London for a little while to try to put something there. There's a couple things, right? One, if it's the start of the season, you can make it work. Two, if you provide an experience for your players and something different. Listen, some of these kids may never leave the country, right? And this could be a good recruiting tool, right? Hey, we're going to go down to Brazil and play North Carolina, or we're going to go to, like you get to go to Brazil to start the season, or you get to go to Ireland. When am I ever going to get to do that, right, as a player again? So there is some value to it. There's going to be a couple opportunities here that pop up because of the changing in the schedule. With some of these conferences going to 9 conference games and being required to go to 9 conference games and being all even, and then having to do 1 non-conference Power 4 game, it could present some opportunities to see more events like this. If you're going to go play and you have two teams fighting, right, over who's going to get the home game right? Yeah. On the non-conference, let's go to Ireland. Let's go to Brazil. Let's go to Saudi Arabia. Let's go to Vegas. Let's go somewhere. So we'll see.
John, I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'll see you on Sunday morning for the announcement, but I'll be watching because I think I may be on the road with the Running Rebels.
I know. I can't believe. Hopefully Adam's there. He can ask some tough, hard-hitting questions.
We like to beat you up. It's a very difficult press conference for you. We basically comment on sneakers.
This is the best press conference I'll ever have to do, because we have a Raiders game at 1 o'clock, and then we have a UNLV bowl announcement, and Coach Mullen will be standing in the back of the room getting antsy, ready to go. And so I'm going to get up there, speak as quickly as I possibly can, have everybody take pictures of showgirls and get the hell out of there.
John, I appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
LVBowl.com, LVBowl.com. Once the announcement's out, get your tickets.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, rolling on here on this Tuesday. Good job there by John Cecenti, LV Bowl, the head of the Las Vegas Bowl. Looks like it's down to two of the old Pac-12 schools and 3 Big Ten schools. It is a New Year's Eve game during the day, so perfect timing. 12:30 kickoff, and once the announcement is made, tickets go on sale at LVBowl.com. Let's get into another big event here in Vegas, and that is UFC on the way. We'll talk a little Raiders as well, as the host of the Autumn Windbags podcast, RJ Clifford, is up with Cofield and Company on this Tuesday. RJ.
What's happening, Cofield? That Las Vegas Bowl, a lot of fond memories in the Clifford household because it used to be Mountain West versus Pac-10. My dad and brother went to BYU. We went to 3 straight bowl games there. We actually got to rush the field when they beat Oregon on a blocked field goal. Nice. I got to rush the field. Cofield. It was great. Amazing.
Las Vegas Bowl is awesome, and obviously it's a big spot for BYU over the years. Now, with some different conference tie-ins, not possible. I will ask you a question. I don't even know how much you're paying attention to college football. You do. I saw you wearing a UCLA hat, so I have a UCLA question for you here in a second. Did you see the story that Penn State was trying to steal BYU's coach, Kalani Sitake, which I laughed at, one, from a culture standpoint, two, no one is outspending the Mormon church anymore. It is done. The church is like, it's always been behind BYU athletics. Now that it's wide open and you can do whatever you want, church money will trump everyone's money. Penn State is a peon.
Well, I will say there's one thing that does trump Mormon money, and that's oil money, which is why Texas Tech is outspending BYU in the Big 12.
Yes.
But to your point, yes, there are some very, very deep pockets out there with strong ties to BYU. But yeah, the Sitake thing, did you buy that? I thought that felt to me like Sitake's agent or somebody trying to get that leaked so they can get more of the next contract with BYU.
I bought it because Penn State's in a situation now. They're getting jerked around by agent Jimmy Sexton, who kind of controls everyone, including James Franklin. And I think he put the kibosh on a lot of candidates behind the scenes who've been pulling strings. And now Penn State, with signing day tomorrow, does not have a coach. This is an absolute disaster. You fire your coach, James Franklin, weeks before the end of the season. You have to have someone in place at the end of the year. It's a total disaster. Let me ask you real quick on UCLA. Are you just wearing a hat because it looks cool, or do you actually care about UCLA football and the whole SoFi Rose Bowl thing? They hired a guy from James Madison, Bob Chesney.
I am. So I chose my college based purely on their wrestling team. So I went to San Francisco State with no football team. So okay. I am an orphan on Saturday. So my brother went to UCLA. My dad and my other brother went to BYU. Oh, nice. So I get to it's like a divorced kid having double Christmases. You know what I mean? I just get to pick whichever team's having a better season, and I just get to root for them. But I will say, though, now it's getting real interesting for BYU, but it was almost a more fun season for UCLA just because of the giant swings, right? Beat Penn State, got Franklin fired after losing all those games at the beginning of the season, and the won 3 Big Ten games in a row just kind of randomly and then kind of came back to earth. And now I really like this hire. James Madison's just kind of a coach factory out there back east. But, it's been a wild college football season for sure.
I want to get into USC, RJ, and I'm going to ask you a question I asked you the last time an event was in Vegas, and we kind of chalked it up to, hey, ESPN doesn't really care, so they're not promoting it. I, again, feel like for some reason, is it just that 2026 is so big that a lot of the promotional efforts are just pointing towards what's going on in 2026? This is a good card, but I want to feel the sizzle locally. This is a good card coming up.
And you know this, Cofield. There's a really good fight fans fight card, and then there's the one with the sizzle, maybe a little less steak, right? When CM Punk would fight, every MMA fan knew it was going to be a terrible fight. He's going to get run over. Brock Lesnar fought. You're like, okay, he became champion, but you kind of knew what you were getting. With this one, Murad Dvalishvili and Alejandro Pantoja, there's only been 7 successful UFC title defenses by men in 2025. All 7 are by those 2 champions.
Wow.
We are watching the prime, or towards, they're both in their mid-30s. So this might be towards the end of the prime of 2 of the best lower weight class fighters of all time. But as you know, it's, you know, if it's not Connor or Ronda or GSP or Pereira or these giant mega superstars, you don't kind of get that glitz and glamour. But diehard fight fans know what they're getting.
All right, let's talk about Murad first and the challenge he's getting here from Jan.
So Murad Dvalishvili.
Oh, I think we lost your mic there, RJ. I think your mic switched.
Mic switched.
Somehow. Now you're on your computer mic, so we'll let him reset that. RJ Clifford is with us, MMA expert at RJ Clifford MMA. He does the Autumn Windbags podcast. He's getting into more video podcasting, so make sure you check that out. If we don't need to be on video, we don't have to be on video. We tape that behind the scenes, RJ, as I'm walking you through fixing your problem with the audio. We'll see if we can get this all set.
I think I'm back. Hear those beautiful pipes again?
Yeah, there you go. There you go. All right, so tell me about the first main with Murad and the challenge that Jan provides.
So it'll be the Bantamweight Championship for the UFC. And Murad is going for an unprecedented 4th straight title defense in a calendar year. It's never happened before. There's been some champions who have won four fights in a year. There's been some champions who attempted four defenses in a year. No fighter has ever won four championship fights as champion in a calendar year. So he's trying to do that. He's going to be a lock for fighter of the year. I think even if he loses on Saturday, he's fighter of the year with what he was able to do, beating Sean O'Malley twice, and Umar Nurmagomedov as well. But he's got an interesting matchup in Petr Yan. So Petr Yan is probably the best pure boxer at 135 pounds. They fought in 2023. Yan has said specifically, I did not take Merab seriously. I was just fighting him, and then it was time to get to fight Aljamain Sterling. This guy can't finish. This guy, all he does is wrestle and shoot. I can handle this guy no problem, and he got his butt whooped. That was, like I mentioned, six fights ago. For Merab Dvalishvili. So Yan has learned from his mistakes, but also Merab's a better fighter than he was 3.5 years ago as well. So pretty interesting grappler versus striker matchup with a little bit of history between the two as well.
Okay, the other fight, fill people in on Joshua Van, because we know Pantoja. Where's Van come from and why has he come so quickly here?
Joshua Van's only 24 years old. The guy was born in 2001. Right, that's how young this kid is. So in his last fight at UFC 317, also in Vegas, the International Fight Week card, he was on the main card against Brandon Royval. And it was a fight that I think maybe the die-hardest of fight fans like kind of circled and said, oh, this should be kind of fun, this Joshua Van guy. He throws a ton of volume. Young dude, Royval's legit, multiple title shots, number one ranked fighter at 125. This could be okay. It stole the show at UFC 317. It shattered every record for significant strikes thrown, significant strikes landed. And Joshua Van just unloaded on Brandon Royval for 15 minutes, and it was back and forth. I've never seen this happen before, Cofield, where a fighter wins a fight at a UFC without it being delineated as the number one contender fight. There was no kind of like, all right, guys, everyone keep your eye on this fight. Like, I don't think Van was even in the top 10. But the fight was so good against such a good opponent. They literally, like, got him through medicals, put him in the front row and said, okay, after the flyweight championship fight, which is also on the same card as done, Van, you're going to go inside and face off with Pantoja. Now, we've seen that happen before, but it was always premeditated. It was always like, okay, the number one contender's in the stands with his face off. Dana White was literally like, as soon as that guy's got stitched up and the commission says he's okay, get him in that octagon because that's our next title challenger.
Wow. UFC coming up this weekend right here. In Las Vegas, Henry Cejudo is on the card in a, I guess we'll call it a gatekeeper fight. And Peyton Talbot, is that the guy who's buddies with that Frank Ocean dude?
That's the guy. And Peyton Talbot, giant favorite over the former two-division champion, wow, Henry Cejudo. So Cejudo's been, I think it's because Cejudo's been flirting with retirement. He is up there in age. He is 38 years old. You know, Olympic gold medalist wrestler, you know, like I mentioned, two division champion in fighting. It's not the years, it's the miles, Cofield. He's got a lot of miles on him, lost three in a row. But it's been to the very best. He lost a championship fight against Aljamain Sterling, split decision, lost to the current champ, Merab Dvalishvili. And then in Seattle in February, he had that weird kind of eye poke technical decision loss to Song Yadong, not like a legit, you know, you actually got finished. It was kind of one of those technical fell apart type fights. So, it's a good idea for the UFC to put these two together. Henry Cejudo on his way out, Peyton Talbot on his way up. How much does Cejudo have left?
Nine fights on the undercard, prelim card on ESPN2, and then you can get ESPN Plus for the early prelim card. Is there someone younger, an up and comer that you're looking at amongst those 18 or so fighters that you really like?
I really like the lightweight matchup between Nazim Sadikov and Firas Aham. So Nazim's 31 and Siam's 28. But 155 pounds, like if the UFC wanted to triple the skill level of its roster, they'd get rid of half of the heavyweight fighters, half of the female fighters, and quadruple their lightweight roster. And just make up three more belts, and immediately the quality of the UFC would be insane. So you get a 17-4 fighter versus an 11-1-1 fighter. These guys are like seven fights away from a title shot. Skill wise, they might be the two very best fighters on the entire card. Like that's just how deep the lightweight division is in the UFC and in MMA all around.
RJ Clifford's with us. All right, last minute or so. We do have to get a little Raiders in here. And again, UFC's fighting great this weekend in Vegas. I know, great, right? You told me you're moving Did you stay in HB?
I moved literally around the corner. Like, I could throw a baseball from my old house to my new house.
How far is your house from SoFi?
No traffic. Yeah. 25 minutes.
Okay. So there's traffic, but...
Yeah.
Were you...
Not at all tempted to go.
You were not at all tempted. See, from what I heard, because my lady friend is a Chargers fan, and then other people who were there were like, man, the Raiders turnout, the fans, I mean, they were there, but they weren't like they've been in the past. Is that kind of what your mindset was here? Like, hey, man, I ain't spending money on this organization right now the way it's going.
So I think you and I, and I know I'm for sure guilty of this, is we get really, really caught in the weeds where I'm looking like, okay, I want the Raiders to lose to the Chargers so we get a better draft pick, and I want these rookies to start, and I want Brock to play, but not too much because I don't want him to get hurt, and I want Genty to get some touches, but I also want the blood. I think the vast majority of football fans are like, my team's in town, I'm going. Period. End of story. Like, once a year, I love my Raiders, I root for them to win. And I just want to be there. And I really think that we get really, really caught up in the weeds about just the very specific how things are going, how much we're going to spend. And I think most sports fans are just like, I've got my team. I want to root. I'm going to go.
Crazy thing is, because tickets have gotten so expensive, win or lose here in Vegas, that L.A. really gives you a chance. L.A. gives you a chance because SoFi is so big to actually go to the game. So the tickets were not that expensive.
Is it cheaper to fly from Vegas, get a hotel room in L.A., buy a ticket in L.A., pay L.A. dinner prices, and then fly back? Might get to that point.
Possibly. The tickets we got were around like $120 a piece, and those may have been $350, $400 a piece, which is just, it's crazy with the Vegas prices. RJ, we're up against it, man. I appreciate it. Sorry about the tech issue there, but good stuff in previewing the UFC. Thanks, man.
You got it, buddy.
RJ Clifford, Autumn Windbags. Follow him on Twitter, MMA expert, former fighter, at RJ Clifford MMA.